Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we do have a legend to talk to. His name is Mr. Ron Love. Been trying to get Ron on the show for a while and we finally got him for an interview. So Ron was the 1985 MPC Nationals heavyweight winner, and then he went on to the Mr. Universe contest that year, and he actually took controversial third place, but he turned pro after that, and he took second place in his very first pro show, which was the 1986 Night of the Champions. He took second to Lee Labrada, and then Ron went on to compete for many, many years throughout the 1980s, and he did every Mr. Olympia, I think, throughout the 1980s. I think his last one was 1991, when he was against Lee Haney in Orlando, Florida, and that was Lee Haney's last Mr. Olympia. So me and Ron are going to talk extensively about his bodybuilding career on this interview, and he's a very interesting guy, a really nice guy, and I've known Ron for many years. I met him back in the 1980s. I actually saw him guest pose at the 1987 Southern States in Miami, Florida, where I was competing, and he was in unbelievable shape. I think Ron's biggest win was the Pro World Competition, which he won in 1987, where he beat Lee Labrada. So we're going to talk to Ron. Ron is heading on 70 years old. I think he'll be 70 years old this year. And he's planning on competing in the Mr. Olympia this year, believe it or not. So we'll see how that goes. But it was a really interesting conversation with Ron Love. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we get to that, I wanted to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. Before we get to our interview with Ron, I do have some emails I want to read. You guys have been emailing me, so I appreciate that. My email address is naturalolympia@gmail.com. If you have any comments on the show, hope you guys enjoyed that two-parter we did with Jerry Brandon and Tom Terwilliger and Phil Williams, where we talked about who looked the best in all the mandatory poses from the golden era. We limited it to the 70s and 80s. Even went back to the 1960s, but we didn't go beyond the 1980s. So if I can remember from memory, we picked Robbie Robinson as the best in the double bicep. I believe Lee Haney and Brian Buchanan tied for the lat spread from the front. Arnold won unanimously for the side chest. The side tricep, I don't think we really had a winner. Some guys picked Samir. I picked Rory Liedelmeyer. I also could have picked Muhammad McAway. One guy we did forget, I don't know if I mentioned this on last week's show, is Bertel Fox. Bertel really could have been in that side chest or side tricep, so we kind of screwed up there. It's hard to remember everybody. I take the blame for that because I should have thought of these guys before we did the interview. Rear double bicep, we all picked Phil Williams, who was one of our guests on the show. It also could have went to Samir Banute, I think. Samir had an incredible rear double bicep. Rear lat spread, I think we went with Tony Pearson. I think that was my choice. Franco also could have won that one. And then the abdominal pose, I think I picked Muhammad McAway. Some guys might have picked Thierry Pestel. And then our most muscular, I think most of the guys picked Arnold in that. I went with Sergio Oliva. So it was an interesting discussion. Maybe we'll do something like that again. But I hope you guys like that. Let's see. Last week, I was on Dave Palumbo's Heavy Muscle Radio Show, where we talked about the New York Pro. I was on there with Dave and Chris Aceto and John Romano, so that was a lot of fun. I don't think I've ever been on Dave's Heavy Muscle Radio Show before, so that was an honor, so I'm glad he asked me to do that. And the comments on the YouTube page were very positive, so I'm glad I did that. Let's see. What else is going on? Oh, I got an email or a phone call, actually, from Annabelle Lopez the other day. And he's organizing a trip to go see Chris Dickerson at the nursing home that Chris is in. And they're going to do that, I think, next weekend. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go. He asked me if I could go to maybe film it and do some interviews with Chris. But my work has just been slammed. I got that job as a security officer at the hospital, and I cannot get off weekends for anything. So, unfortunately, I couldn't make it. Annabelle would have given me maybe more of a heads up on this trip. Not just 1 week. Maybe I could have arranged it, but I can't do it this quickly. So maybe if Annabelle goes in the future again, I can go see Chris, because I would love to go see him. So they're going to do that next weekend. So he'll let me know how that goes. I did talk to Ernie Santiago today, who was the 1983 NPC USA winner. I believe it was 83, because Dale Ruplinger won it in 82. And Ernie was a middleweight, and he won the overall. He's from Hawaii. And he was a big figure on the national scene. So I made friends with him on Facebook and asked him if he wanted to come on the show. So hopefully he will come around and do that. Also, my friend Larry Bernstein set me up with Jesse Goutreau, who used to be a really popular competitor with the AAU. So I got to speak to Jesse by text. So hopefully we can get Jesse on the show pretty soon, too. What else? Oh, big news. My book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, is now going to be an audiobook. So for those of you who do not like getting a physical book, and I know I've got a lot of emails about making that into an ebook, which I'm still working on, but we do have it available now as an audio book. So it should be available by June 1st. So when it's available, I will send out an email letting all you guys know. If you want to get on my email list, just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I'll add you to my mailing list. But yeah, that should be available by June 1st. It will be on my website, bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. It will also be on my John Hansen Fitness website. So it'll be on both websites. So you'll be able to buy it there. And then you can just listen to it in your car or on your computer or however you want to listen to it on your phone. And it's going to be an audiobook. So we got the whole thing recorded. So that will be really big news. So I will let you guys know when that's up. Speaking of my John Hansen Fitness website, my 3-month transformation event. It's not a contest, but it's just I have the 3-month transformation program available on the John Hansen Fitness. I've been getting a lot of people signing up for that lately, so I'm really happy for that. The thing that separates this from most programs is I will work with you guys every week. So a lot of people send me their workouts, what they do every week, and I write up new workouts for them for the following week. We've also been doing some Zoom calls to check in with all of my clients once a week and just find out how things are going. It doesn't have to be a long call, like 5-10 minutes, but just helps to touch base with everybody and make sure they're making progress so they get the most out of the program for all 12 weeks. So if you're interested in that, just go to johnhansenfitness.com. It is right there on the homepage. All right, let's get to these emails. All right, this is our new good friend, Janae Mister. Janae is the teenager, 19 years old, who is totally into old school bodybuilding. And she wrote that email a couple weeks ago, which I absolutely loved. And she has a couple of channels or a couple of pages, I should say, on Instagram. So Janae said, "Hey, John, no emails again. Well, I'm back again, and this will be a long one. I agree about Franco and Tony on the lat spread and also Jeff King and Franco for the most muscular. I never realized how good Momo's back was. You also mentioned Roy Callender a bit, and I think he's quite underrated as a bodybuilder. Great physique. I agree. That's also nice to see how Phil and Tom admire each other after all these years, and they did all along, but they didn't admit it then, of course. It's nice to see these men talk about their experience and behind-the-scenes thoughts decades later. It's like the same path but different parallels. Well, I was going to go to Venice, California right now this weekend and week, but I am moving instead, finally getting into my own space, you know, that feeling being on your own for the first time as a young adult, freedom." All right. She says, "I'm looking at more private gyms or bodybuilding gyms where I'm living. I hate the thought of training at commercial gyms. I just can't do it anymore. not because of the equipment, but the environment, the people. It's way too distracting. The last time I went to a gym, I had a very annoying experience that pretty much did it for me. I was on a leg extension about to finish to go to the leg curl, and I noticed this girl was just stretching on it, and she'd been stretching now for quite a few minutes. Not in between sets, mind you, just plain old stretching on the machine while being on her phone. After my set, I simply went up to her and asked her how much longer did she have, and she rudely told me she was using it and she'll be done soon or something along those lines. I was so fucking pissed I wanted to smack her. I can relate to that. Just taking up all her space on the leg curl, not even using it, and she looked like garbage too, so she actually wasn't even trying to train or anything. These normies do not understand the seriousness of our training. They just think that they can do all this stupid shit. I found a few local gyms, bodybuilding type gyms, that I'm definitely going to be checking out and never going into a commercial gym again. In other news, I booked my trip for Venice. I was supposed to be there this weekend, but since I moved, I had to change plans. I'll be there for sure at the end of June. I've already paid for my room. I'm very excited to go to Gold's and just be in Venice again. It was so magical last time. I'm carrying much less body fat than when I first emailed. I've been dieting now for 4 weeks, so it'll be 7 by the time I go to Venice. And trust me, I am suffering. I am not bullshit dieting. I want to collapse on the floor as I'm typing this, but no, on the way to go train back. Yes, I know, rest when you need to, but I'm fine. I'm young. I go to bed hungry pretty much every night, and I wake up with cramps in my stomach every single morning due to how hungry I am. Sometimes it gets so bad, I get woken up at such an early hour due to how bad it hurts. Wow. You have to suffer, die. You have to want it. Samir once told me, don't diet too hard, but you know what I want. I want to be shredded to the bone. I want the death face when I'm in Venice, sunken in, veins everywhere. My family kept saying to me last week, am I eating, and that I'm looking very skinny. They don't get it. Obviously, for 1 year of training, I don't have the density and experience to look all hard and huge or super grainy or anything, but I can definitely be ripped to the bone like Bruce Lee. My chest is so striated right now, it's like saying hi more than my voice is, and I see muscles popping out that I don't even know I had. It's a really fascinating thing, let alone exciting. Get big or go home. I want to take pics. I ain't going to the Mecca fat. My Jack friend says Gold's is coming back to life how it used to be, and I told him it doesn't matter to me. I'll go there if there's one person in there or if it's crowded to full capacity. I have to go to the Mecca. Every bodybuilder has to go at least once, right? I'm not sure if you heard of the YouTube channel German in Venice, but he's been living in Venice since the early 90s, and he even used to train at World's Gym on Abbott Kinney and Brooks sometimes. He's not a bodybuilder or anything, but he's still that same kind of era in Venice Beach. He makes a lot of YouTube videos on Venice, Santa Monica, and one of his recent videos from last week, he was on the boardwalk walking by the weight pen, and it had a banner on it, Muscle Beach Outdoor Gym Renovation. New fitness equipment and weights, flooring, lighting, rings, and other upgrades coming summer of 2022. Thanks for your patience during our renovation. We're working hard to make you your park proud. So that's good news, except the typo they put in, and it was in capital too. Make you park proud. I don't know how they missed it, but I'm calling them out. That's too funny. It should be to make your park proud. Anyway, is that not amazing news or what? I don't want to have to wait another year, but it's so worth it. I have not contacted the women yet as I've been busy with my move, but as soon as I get settled, I will email all of them to talk about the show. And yes, I saw that pic of you and Lori Bowen on Instagram. I'm not sure if you remember, but I commented on asking where she was, if you knew where she ended up, and you responded you didn't know. Well, I ended up finding her myself a couple weeks later, and she is so sweet and supportive. Lori told me she trained with super strict form and a bit lighter weights. She never focused on lifting super heavy or throwing the weights around. She always chose form and contraction over weight, as did most of you guys and girls from the golden era. I would email you every episode, honestly. I just don't want to be a nuisance or think I'm looking for attention. I really do admire your podcast, and I re-listen to every episode all the time. I already heard the last part two over 4 times. Also, P.S., what about bringing on Roy Liedemeyer? He's very active on Instagram and always giving positive messages. I'm so excited for the Ron Love episode. Thanks, John. Janae Mister. All right, Janae. Always happy to hear from you. Got that old school spirit. I love it. Great. And she's so excited about training. It's awesome to hear from her. Rory Liedemeyer, I contacted him several times and he never responds. So I'll try him again. He is on my Facebook page too. And I think he's actually made some comments. So I'll give it another try. Him and Matt Mendenhall are two guys I've been trying to get forever. All right. My next email says, hey, John, I really can't understand why there aren't more people listening to your podcast. I think it must be through them not knowing about it, as to be able to listen to the champions is amazing and a privilege for us all. I'll keep spreading the word and hopefully all the other fans will too, so you get the following you deserve. John, I've spoken to Jim as we've known each other for a long time. I want to see how things were with him in general as he is 82 now, and tell him all about you and the show and the opportunity to be on there. I've told him what a gentleman you are and how very respectful you are with your guests, and he asked me to forward him some info on the show, so I've sent him a link to the website. I really hope he does take part. I'll leave it a week or two and then give him another call and see if I haven't heard anything back, or even pop over to the gym for a chat. He's still active in NABBA, although there are no shows lined up because of COVID. The theaters over here just don't like the situation. He's training 3 times a week and feels great, a testament to keeping fit. Hopefully he'll be in touch soon, John, with some good news. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Best regards, Rob. And what Rob is talking about is Jim is the president of NABBA, and I guess he goes way back, being 82 years old. So I guess he's got some great stories. So yeah, that'd be great to talk to Jim. So hopefully he will want to be on the podcast. All right, this one is from Mike. He says, hi, John. A friend introduced me to your YouTube channel. I've been really enjoying your interviews. They're great. I read somewhere on your site that you have an ebook version of your Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends book. Please let me know if that's available for purchase as I live in Europe. Wishing you continued success. Yeah, Mike, I'm working on the ebook, but as I said, we now have it in audio. So I have Mike's email. I'll email that when we have that available on June 1st. All right, and then this one is from Andrew Heffernan. And Andrew is one of our supporters on the Patreon. So Andrew is a great supporter of the podcast. And Andrew says, what? No emails about the first Mandatories episode? That's criminal, and I have to rectify the situation. I love the episode and the whole discussion, lengthy digressions and all. And I thought you hit a lot of really good points about some of the nuances of competitive bodybuilding. I think a lot of casual fans still don't know what distinguishes winners from close seconds and from also-rans in a bodybuilding competition, and this type of episode helps to clarify that. I also thought your choices were spot on. Robbie for the front double by, Haney for the front lat spread, Arnold for the side chest, hell yes. And then kind of a grab bag for the side triceps. Was Samir the ultimate winner on that one? I don't think we had an ultimate winner on side triceps. I'll have to listen to it again. He says, interesting how the different poses showcase the best points of different physiques. A great physique might not win each pose, but might do well enough in each to win the overall competition. Interesting that though Arnold was the king during the golden era, he really only entered the discussion seriously on one pose. I can't wait for round two. Keep it up, John. Andrew. All right. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you to all of you guys for emailing me. I love getting your emails. So please send me more emails. Let me know what you think about this episode with Ron Love. All right, before we get to the episode with Ron, I also want to mention I will be reading another article. We haven't read an article in a while. This one's going to come from the November 1986 issue of Muscle and Fitness, and it is about the Night of the Champions that Lee Labrada won in 1986, and Ron Love was a close second place. So I'm going to read that right after we get done with our interview with Ron Love. All right, that's all I got for opening, guys. Here's our interview with Ron Love, Pro World winner, and the winner of the 1985 MPC Nationals in the heavyweight division. Here we go. Hope you enjoy it. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, Mr. Ron Love, one of the greatest professional bodybuilders during the 1980s. Ron was the 1985 heavyweight Nationals champion, and then he went on to win the Pro World Championships and also the Niagara Falls, and he was a big staple in the Mr. Olympia for many years. Ron, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Always great to talk to a legend like yourself.
I'm a legend now.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I guess so, since they made me a so-called Hall of Famer.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Ron, we always start at the beginning. So if you could tell us how you got into bodybuilding. I know you were a police officer, and then that kind of led into getting into the bodybuilding field, right?
Yeah, that's how it happened. And how it happened was that at the time, you know, I had never lifted weights before, you know, through high school, through college or whatever, you know, played a few years of professional baseball. And I was always just an athlete.
Okay.
But when I got on the job, as far as being a police officer, I started working different units, and I started working this narcotic unit.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was in narcotic, we get attacked by a couple of guys who are so-called, I call it coon hunting. You know, that night they saw me and my crew hanging out, and they didn't know that we were police officers. They just knew that we were black, you know.
Okay.
And they approached us while we were getting in a vehicle and rode up on us about 3:30 in the morning on 10-speed bicycles, you know. I wonder why these guys out this time of night with 10-speed bicycles.
Wow.
And then I was getting in the vehicle, and while I was bending over, the guy says, "Hey, man." I said, "Yeah, what's up?" He says, "We don't like niggas in the neighborhood." I said, "Well, I don't know no niggas in this neighborhood." Something like that. But I said a few things, you know.
Right, right.
And after I got through talking, they pulled out guns and started shooting, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a real devastating moment. I had been in Detroit all my life and had some type of confusions like that, but never to the point where they were trying to take your life, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure if they knew we were the police, they probably wouldn't have done it.
Right, right.
But they didn't know that. But
so you ended up getting shot then?
I wound up getting shot in the leg.
Okay.
And what happened was during the time I was disabled, I picked up weight because, you know, when I got shot, I was only 200 pounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I never weighed over 200 pounds in my life.
Wow. Did you have a fast metabolism, Ron, when you were younger?
Yeah, I had a good metabolism. And one of the coaches, one of my baseball coaches was always telling me that, yeah, Ron, you know, you got the physique. You should be a bodybuilder.
Oh,
yeah. And I looked at it like it was crazy. Bodybuilding. You know, because the only thing I could think about bodybuilding during that time was wearing these doggone panties, you know. So, you know. You know, I was a little hardcore back then, you know. but I never thought it would happen.
Wow.
I never even thought about it. But I gained that weight, and I healed up, and I needed to get back to work.
Okay.
There's no way I could go back to work if I couldn't fit my uniform.
Yeah.
I wasn't going straight back to narcotics at that time. So I started trying to find a place to work out, and I found this one place. And I, like I said before, I saw a guy, man, that I thought just looked unbelievable, man. I never saw a guy look, I'd never been that close to a so-called bodybuilder.
At the gym, okay.
At the gym, yeah.
You remember his name?
His name was, I was just asking about the last time, and I remember his name now and forgot it again. But I got his name from the front desk, and I ran it and found out he had been locked up for 20 years.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
20 years, but this guy was he was amazing, man. I mean, wow. I've never seen a guy look like that in person.
Did he compete too, or he was just a big?
He said he had competed in a show, and he showed me this piece of paper that he had competed in one of the shows right here in Michigan, in Dearborn.
Okay.
But I never saw anything else about it. But okay. He passed us off like that. I was just, when I said I was just amazed. I'd never seen anybody look like that in person.
Yeah.
You know, and I asked him one day, could I train with him? And he looks at me. He looks at me up and down from toe to the top of my head. Because I said to him, because I called him my man. I said, "My man, you know, you think I could train with you?" He said, "Well, first of all, I ain't your man." I said, "Well, I don't mean it like that, bro. You know, you ain't my type." You know. So he looked at me up and down. Next thing I know, he turned around and walked away. I said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Maybe I don't want to train with this dude, you know what I'm saying? This guy's crazy." So for the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm coming to the gym, but I keep watching him out of the corner of my eye, watching me. I guess he was trying to figure out what I was doing there.
Right.
Or if I was the type of person that he was really willing to work with, you know.
Right.
And one day, I'm on the bench, because I was always pretty strong when I started on the bench.
Okay.
I could automatically do like 315 pounds when I first started, tried it.
Okay.
Yeah. And he looked me up, and so I'm on the bench, and he leans over, and he says, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, what do you mean by yeah?" then I had to think back. Oh, yeah, that's the first thing I asked him.
Yeah, he's asked your question from 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago. So, John, I busted out laughing. I couldn't complete. I can't believe this guy gave me this kind of answer 3 weeks later.
Right.
But you know, John, it was the best move I've ever made because this guy took me under his wing. Mm-hmm. And when I say he kicked my ass every day.
Wow.
He took me to the limit. And then he made me buy this banana pudding pie from his mama every day for $5. They said, "You got all kind of carbs in it. You got all kind of protein in it. I was eating banana pudding pie, and we was walking around drinking large containers of non-fat milk every day while we trained.
Oh, wow.
he had an unbelievable method. I ain't never tried it with nobody else, though. But I thank him to this day because he was a blessing in my life, man. He really was.
How long did you train with him?
For about 2 years.
2 years, wow. So your physique obviously really developed during that time, right?
It really did. This is how I started competing, though. This guy, I'm walking out of the gym one day. He said, man, he said, you really improved. He said, you should think about competing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, think about competing where? He said, in the bodybuilding show. I said, man, I told him just like I did to the world, man, I ain't getting on no stage with no panties on, all the kind of crazy stuff these guys doing these days. And he looks at me and started laughing. And I said, man, don't be laughing at me like that. Don't laugh at me like that. Then he dared me. He said, I dare you to do the show. Now, you know, what does I do? You don't want to be dared, and I don't want to be dared. So you know I had to do the show. Okay. So here I asked the guy to show me how to get ready for a show. But he didn't really know how to do that because, you know, he developed his physique being locked up.
Yeah, right.
You know, so he lived this on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So I asked a few questions here, a few questions there. And I got in some pretty good shape. And I entered the show, and there was 50 guys in my class. Back then, it was the AAU. There was no NPC.
Yeah.
During that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I, I stepped on stage, and when I walked out there, everybody started screaming and hollering. And then I had to remember why I stepped on stage. You know, so I just started posing.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know. But it was really nice for the crowd to show me some type of nice reception, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And when they call out the placings, in my class, I took ninth. I took ninth out of 50 people. It was 50 people in the class.
Wow, yeah, the shows were so big back then, right?
Yes, they were huge.
Yeah.
And after I did it the first time, man, for some reason, it gave me this itch,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I wanted to see if I could do better.
Yeah.
I got ready.
Plus, you got a great reception, too.
Yes, got a great reception.
What was the name of that contest?
That was the Michigan Bodybuilding Championship.
Oh, the state championships. Okay.
That was the state championships.
Wow.
It surely was. In fact, I never competed in a different show until I won that
one. Oh, okay. You kept doing that one. Okay.
I kept doing that one because I went back to next year and took ninth again.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
How did your physique look back then in that first show?
You know what? I can't even remember. But I guess I must have looked okay.
I mean, did you have pretty good size at that time?
Decent size.
Yeah.
But like I said before, you know, even when I was doing playing the baseball and the football, I had a pretty decent physique, you know, just genetically wise. Because my dad had phenomenal genetics, man.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yes, he did. He really did, man.
Yeah.
In fact, that's how I just keep all the guys off of me. I said, man, y'all mess with me, I'm going to call my dad, you know. and he would come across the block with me and all my fellas, and they saw him. Everybody ran.
Wow.
He was a tough dude.
Yeah.
He was a tough dude. My dad is one of the reasons why I'm here today because, you know, when they first put drugs on the street,
mm-hmm.
me and my fellas tried to find out how to deal them, how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we was on the street called B-Wick and Mac, and we got a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So I was hanging out there one day with my fellas. It was 12 of us. My gang was called the 12s.
Okay.
It was 12 of us. And we stood out there. So I'm out on Mac and B-Wick. That was a dangerous area. I lived about two blocks from there, though. So my dad drives up, and he sees me standing on the corner. He gets out the car, and he said, boy, what you doing out here? I said, Dad, I'm just hanging out here with my fellas. Yo, fellas, you ain't got no fellas. Only fella you got is me. And I said, Dad, it ain't like that. He says, it's like I say it is. So my dad grabs me by the collar,
wow.
looks down the street at the rest of my fellas, and he did this. He pointed at each one of them. And then my dad looks at me and he points at me. Then he takes that big hand he had, and he hits me in the nose,
holy
breaks my nose, breaks my jaw, breaks my couple of my teeth.
Holy shit!
Yeah. And then he pointed at my guys again. All of them ran
because
I knew all their dads. None of their dads were like my dad. My dad, and actually my dad's best friend. You remember Berry Gordy with the Temptations?
Sure. Yeah.
Yes. With Motown?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was my dad's best friend.
No
they grew
kidding.
Up together.
Wow.
Yes, that was a blessing in disguise.
How old were you when this happened, Ron?
I was about 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
I was about 15 when this happened. But you know what? My dad saved my life because if he hadn't have done that, no telling where I'd have wound up at.
Yeah.
So
what does your dad do for a living?
Well, he's passed away. He was working at the factory at Chrysler.
Okay.
And he always thought I should have worked at Chrysler too when I was going to college when I was playing ball. Because you know, when I got my pro card, he tells me, John, see, if you'd have worked at Chrysler like I told you would, you'd have been one of those guys making commercials with him. I told my dad, I ain't seen a black guy doing a commercial yet with Chrysler. What do you mean?
What made you want to become a police officer?
I played down in Lakeland, Florida for 3 years, man. I got involved. This story is crazy, okay, but it's the truth. I came home. One of my best friends who was in Vietnam, who had been in Vietnam at the time,
okay,
he came to me and introduced me to this lady. And me and this lady got involved. But he failed to tell me some of the stories. He didn't tell me that this lady he introduced me to was the mother of his child.
Oh, yeah.
It's a crazy story, man. But,
so this guy who introduced you to this lady, he had a kid with this same lady.
Yeah. Okay. And he was, and you know what? And he was my best friend.
Oh, really?
Yes. Where do you find best friends like that? But, and I told her I didn't want to have any kids. But, you know, I mean, we got busy and she had a kid.
Okay.
I had a son. So when I had the son, I thought about, now I got to get a job. You know, I wasn't taking a chance going back down and playing ball.
Right. Right.
So what happened was that I was out shopping one day and I went to Hudson's and they had this recruiting van sitting in front of Hudson's because at that time they were trying to hire more black police officers in Detroit.
Oh, wow. It's kind of like meant to be or something.
Yeah. And I was kind of like this black guy who kept riding, walking past this van, and these black officers kept asking, come on, son. Come on, join up. Join the police department. Mm-hmm. I said, man, I don't want to be no police officer. But every time I walked back towards them, they would hit me up. Mm-hmm. So I stopped and filled out the application. So they told me when to show up to take the test. And the day when the test came along, I didn't show up.
Hmm.
2 days later, they was at my house knocking on my door.
Damn, they you know, wanted you.
Yeah, they wanted me because, you know, they do a background check. And if you're a pretty good student, they thought I would make a good police officer, I guess. And so I went and took the test, passed the test. So now they scheduled me for the police academy.
Okay.
So first day of police academy, guess what? I didn't show up. I didn't show up the second day, the third day, the fourth day. Next thing I know, they're at my front door again.
Yeah.
They said, son, what we got to do to get you started?
Right.
So they rescheduled me for the police academy. And I went, through the academy. Next thing I know, I was a police officer.
Wow.
And that's how it happened, becoming a police officer.
What did you get your degree in college?
You never decide. Athletics, of course.
Okay.
Trying to learn every game so I could be a coach.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
You know, and so many of the games I hated. I hated soccer. I hated anything that didn't have a baseball in it, except for football. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was pretty good at basketball, too, though. But
how did you do in baseball? Were you good enough? You weren't good enough to get to the pros?
Well, I got signed. I got drafted out of high school.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Who'd you play for?
I played for Denby High School.
Okay.
Denby High School. I went to Southeastern first for my first semester, but I got recruited for coaches when I played on the Sandlocks, who were coaching in Sandlocks, but they were coaches at Denby High School.
Okay.
And they recruited me to come to Denby because Denby at that time was an all-white school,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some of the other guys that I knew in my neighborhood, they went to Denby too. So I decided to sign up and go myself.
Okay.
It was a great move. You know,
baseball in college too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I played baseball in college. I also got looked at while I was in college, but I got drafted out of high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I was a left-handed pitcher. I got signed as a left-handed pitcher, and went down to Lakeland, Florida, and played down there for 3 years.
Oh, okay. So that's why you're on Lakeland. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was a unbelievable time, because that time they still had white and black water fountains, which I had never seen before.
Yeah, right. And especially in Florida, right in the South.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the experience. Because I was an athlete, you know.
Right.
The last thing I ever thought I would become would be a bodybuilder.
Yeah, right.
But it's amazing what God sets up for you.
Yeah, yes. How about it? How it all works out.
Yes.
So you ended up winning the Michigan championships in 82 then, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That was the first year at the MPC, right? And that's when the MPC started?
That was the first MPC show here in Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many times did you have to do the Michigan championships before you won it?
Two times.
Two times? Oh, okay.
Two times, yeah.
You got ninth, and then you won it?
Yeah. Well, you got to realize it was different with the MPC than it was with the AAU.
Oh,
the AAU, they went by height.
Yeah.
The MPC, they went by weight. So everything changed, you know, as far as class.
Okay.
And the second time I took it, well, the first time I took it, a guy came from up in Pontiac, and I never seen a guy look like that. When he walked in, he took his clothes off, went the way in. Everybody said, "Woo, woo," like that. And all I could think about, John, was that when I went into next year, I want everybody to say the same thing about me. Then I know I won.
What was that guy's name? Do you remember?
Yeah. His name was what was his name? I'm not pretty good on names today for some reason. but he was more of a middleweight. But he was
good physique, though.
Yeah, great physique. He was the first black guy who had won the state championships.
Oh, really? Okay.
All other times people won, they were different nationalities.
Right.
But he was kind of amazing at the time. But I promised myself that if I ever went up against him again, I would beat him.
Yeah.
And the next year, when I stepped in the auditorium and I got on and I took my stuff off and stepped up on the scale, everybody was saying, "Woo, woo." First thing I thought, I'm going to win. And I won.
Yeah.
And from that day forth, I dedicated myself to getting to the point where I was going to get a pro card.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask you. So you had that in mind. You were going to work for the pro card. Okay.
And what happened was that a few years later, that was in 80, was that 85?
85.
Yeah, it was 85. I went down to Beaumont, Texas.
Yeah.
And I did the Junior USA.
So you did the 82 Nationals too, right? The one that Lee Haney won?
Mm-mm, no. Oh,
yeah. Okay, I'm looking at this.
No, in 82, I won the Michigan in 82.
Yeah, just the Michigan, that was it.
Just the Michigan.
Okay.
But I went down a few.
What was your first national level show you did?
The Junior USA down in Beaumont, Texas.
Oh, that was your first one?
That was my first.
Okay, all right.
And I went down there and
won that.
Against everybody else, because everybody said, "Man, you can't win that show." Well, I don't know why you're going down there. But I'd already paid my fee, already paid for the hotel, already paid everything I had to pay. I said, "Well, you know, if I lose, I lose."
Yeah.
So I go down there, and I'm standing in the doorway. And who do I see? Rachel McLeish.
Oh, wow. My favorite.
I got my, tell me about it. And I got my tank top on. I got my shorts on.
Yeah.
And she looks at me. She says, "Oh, my God, you look fantastic. You're going to win the show."
Wow.
That's what she said to me.
Okay.
But, you know, but I'd already heard I can't win the show, you know.
Yeah.
I got that in my mind. So she comes back a few minutes later and knocks on my door. And she says, "Do you have a video? Do you have a recorder so I can practice my posing?" Man, I was looking every place to get this because I got Rachel at least at my front door.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I mean, she was just beautiful, amazing. Oh my God. And I got that, and she said she would bring it back. But when she brought it back, she says, "Would you like to have lunch with me?"
Wow.
Lunch. I said, "Lunch." I said, "Is that all?" So we actually had lunch.
No kidding.
John, yes, in her room, John.
Wow.
So what happened was that we talked, boom, boom, boom. And then she asked me, "Well, how's your routine?" And I said, "I think my routine is pretty good." She said, "I'd like to see it." I said, "Really?" So I dashed like I don't know what, going to my room. I got into my posing trunk, and I came back to her room. And I went through my posing routine. And she said she really liked it.
Hmm.
And I said, "You really liked it?" I said, "If you like mine, I like to like yours." So she actually got dressed. This is the first time I told this story to anybody.
Okay.
Just between me and you.
but she
posed for me.
Wow.
She looked fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And we just hit it off as friends. I mean, I thought she was one of the most
unbelievable
people I've ever met. She was so nice.
Great. Yeah.
And then and she made me feel comfortable about getting ready to step on stage.
Yeah. Then, you had to feel great by the time you got on stage, right?
Great ain't the word. And guess who was there? Ronnie Coleman was there.
Really? Yeah.
You remember The Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah, sure.
He was in that show.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Show. Wow.
He was in that show.
I'm kidding.
And I kept hearing that I wasn't going to win. But when I went to the prejudge and went to the show, when they called out first place, I won first place and plus overall.
Yeah. Wow. What was Rachel doing? Was she guest posing?
Yeah, she guest posed.
Okay.
She was there guest posing, also Tom Platt.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because you know Tom Platt is from here originally.
Yeah, Michigan, right? Yeah, he from trained Michigan. At the powerhouse. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, he trained the powerhouse. Yeah.
Yeah, that powerhouse got great history. I had Samir there, right? And Tom Platts. And
me and Samir used to train together.
Oh, really?
You didn't know that.
No.
Samir used to train at Chrysler. I used to pick him up every day from his house to come here.
That's right.
Train.
That was the job he got when he first moved to America, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I used to pick him up from his house in Dearborn and bring him here to train.
Wow.
And that's how I met Samir.
How did he look back then?
He looked amazing, man.
Did he really? Yeah.
He looked amazing. He was doing so many unorthodox movements, though.
Oh,
but
really?
He was getting it done.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so impressed with Samir.
Hmm.
What a hothead.
Didn't he win Mr. Michigan one time?
He won Mr. Michigan. When he won Mr. Michigan, he moved from here. And when he moved from here, the next thing I was hearing, he got his pro card.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he went back to his country. And I think he did some show there.
Yeah.
And he got his pro card.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So would you say he was a hothead too?
Who is hothead? but here in Detroit, you need to be a hothead.
Yeah, right.
And even while we was on the circuit, boy, man, he's getting so much stuff with the judges, with the promoters and everybody else. But we were straight, you know, because we was cool.
Right.
He was my little dog. You know, we were good friends.
Right, right.
I got a lot of love for him. Yeah,
yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. So then you go to the Nationals that year, that same year, right? And that was in Miami.
Yeah. Well, when I did the show in Texas, the people promoting that show, they wanted to sponsor me.
Oh, okay.
So they called me and said, "Ryan, we'd love to sponsor you. Getting ready for the Nationals." I said, "Well, it's okay." So made a little deal. I took a little 3 months leave of absence from the job.
Okay.
They brought me down. But when I got there, when I got off the plane, they wanted me to sign a contract. I said, "I'm still an amateur. Why would I sign a contract?"
Right.
So the deal kind of went a little funky, you know. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going back home. I didn't already put all this together, so I'm going to stay there.
Yeah.
So I met a few guys, and we kind of got together, and they just started showing me around. And we just hooked up. And I got so much support from so many of the guys there, you know.
Yeah.
Because they saw the show when I competed there.
The Junior
USA. The Junior USA, yeah. And I started training and getting ready for the Nationals. And it went well. It went really well. But then what happened was that I ran out of money.
Oh, okay.
So I had to find a way to get more money to stay.
Uh-huh.
So I called my favorite aunt down back in Detroit. And that's my aunt Norris. I love her to death. I still love her to death because she had my back. Her and my mom had my back all the way.
Yeah.
She asked me how much I needed. And the show is going to be in about 4 weeks. And I said, I need maybe at least a couple of $1,000, you know. And she sent it to me.
Hmm.
But as she sent it to me, she says, "I'm going to send you this." And she says, "But are you going to win the show?" I said, "I know it. I'm going to win this." And so I went on, continued to do what I needed to do to get ready for the show.
Uh-huh.
And when it was time for me to fly to Miami, you know, I'm thinking, "Oh, my God, I done did this. I done did that. How is this going to turn out?"
Yeah.
And when I got there and got off the plane, guess who was there waiting on me?
Who?
My aunt.
Oh, no kidding. She was there in Miami.
She was there in Miami to support me.
Wow. That's
what you call love from your family, man.
And yeah, man. That's
went
great.
To the show and really thought I was on point.
Yeah. Were you favored to win the heavyweight, or were there other guys who were more favored? Because remember in the magazines, they used to always like pick out who they thought was going to win that year?
Yeah. Well, the only show that everybody had saw me at was the Junior USA.
Okay.
And when I done the Junior USA, when I came back to Detroit, Big Norm and Big Will, who owns Powerhouse, they were saying, "Man, everybody was talking about you, Ron. They was talking about, who is this?" They said, "You one of the most conditioned heavyweight stadium that ever seen."
Yeah.
You know, right. This type of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that made my head a little swell a little bit, so it made me feel more confident.
Yeah, yeah.
But I actually thought that Williams, he looked good.
Phil Williams, yeah.
Phil Williams looked good. He was well-conditioned, yeah. Good physique. But I ain't never thought he should beat me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then you had Little Librada.
Yeah.
I ain't never thought he should have beat me, did you?
Right.
But we met.
You thought he should have won that overall that year at the Nationals?
Well, it was tight. I mean, it was hard to say. You know, yeah. I thought I came in great condition. I was happy that I won my class.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a big honor.
Because that prepared me for the universe. You know?
Right. Yeah, so tell me about that trip. So you go over to Sweden now for the Mr.
Yes.
Yeah.
And John, there's no way I should have lost the heavyweight class. I don't care what nobody say.
I've got that show on tape.
What's that now?
I've got that show on tape. I agree with you.
Yeah, I should have won that. There's no way.
You got third, right?
I got third.
Yeah.
And the guy they put second from Sweden, no way he should have beat me.
Right, old Bengtsson. Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, but it was so political.
Yeah.
I mean, because one of the MCs, which was, he commentated.
Chris Dickerson?
And Chris Dickerson said, there's no way. I heard I said, there's no way anybody should have beat Ron Love in the heavyweight division.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were bigger and more cut than both of those guys would be here.
I was on point. I was on point for that show.
It seemed like the Germans did really well that year because
Peter Hansel.
Yeah. And then Joseph Gromulus from Germany beat out Phil Williams.
Yeah.
I thought Phil could have beat him, too, you know?
Yes, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It was just so political, I think. So political.
Yeah.
They want to, but, you know, they always want to beat the Americans, you know?
Yeah.
What can I say?
But I remember you did the interview after the show with Rick Wayne, and you said, I'm going pro.
Yeah.
I'm going pro.
I said, I'm going pro. Because he's talking about, you coming back next year? Are you crazy? I ain't coming back this next year. And then after that, I got ready for... In between you knowing that, that's when I came home. You got to realize I was a police officer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so I was totally natural. Just between you and a few people would tell me, so nah, Ron, you know, you got to get on the juice.
Mm-hmm.
So I had some pictures in the gym. And I said, man, look at that picture up there. Don't I look like some of them other pros? I did. That's exactly what I said. I don't think I need that.
Yeah.
But a couple of people took me to see this doctor, you know, a few ways down. And they set me down with him. And he talked to me about this. He talked me about that. He talked me about this. But I was still, I said, man, I think I worked hard enough where I don't have to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had never taken anything. And so this talked to me about 6-7 hours to convince me that I would be okay, you know. I mean, because it wasn't really against the law at that time, you know.
Right, yeah.
But also, too, I was thinking about health-wise.
Oh, okay.
But he convinced me that if I describe this for you, you'll be okay.
Okay.
So by the time I left his office, he had gave me some Anavar, he gave me some Deca, and he gave me some tests.
Okay.
And he set me on a little program for that. But when I did it, when I got ready for the, because I got ready for the Night of Champions.
Night of Champions in 86, yeah.
Yeah, in 86. And when I got ready, taking this product, I didn't see any difference. I really didn't. No, I didn't see no difference at all because I was already pretty conditioned. I was in great shape already, you know.
Right.
But I was kind of disappointed at that show, too, because...
Lee Librada.
Yeah. Lee Librada shouldn't have beat me that show.
Well, you got second, though, right? So that's good for your first pro show.
I got second by... He beat me by 1 point.
Did he really? Wow.
By 1 point. But you know what? The next year, did the Night of Champions again. I took third.
Right.
But then we went to the Pro World Champions, it's in Essen, Germany.
Yeah, you beat Librada.
I beat Librada, yes. But Librada was my dog, too. I love Librada because I had met him before. I did a mixed pairs show.
Yeah, those were popular back then, yeah.
Yeah, with a young lady who had won the Michigan that year in Detroit.
Okay.
And that's when I first met Librada because it was someplace down north. And that's when Kevin Lawrence and Diana Dennis were still, they were the tops mixed pairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought we should have beat them that show, but they allowed them to beat us by 1 point.
Oh, did you? Really?
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know you did mixed pairs. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, I only did it twice. I did it with a young lady because everybody's talking about what guy's big enough to do mixed pairs with this girl getting ready for the Michigan, because this girl was amazing.
Really?
Wow. I mean, if she'd have stayed in bodybuilding, she'd have been top dog because you know I trained Linda Murray.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Linda Murray came from your gym too, right? From
Bob. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the one that told her because, you know, she was trying to be a cheerleader.
Uh-huh.
And she went down to Dallas trying to be one of the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. And when she came back, I said, don't worry about it, Linda. I'm going to make you Miss Olympia. And I took her to her first Miss Olympia when Corey Everson stepped down.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that's one that was happening. That happened in New York that year. And Linda, I mean, she turned that Olympia out. Wow. I had never seen anybody. She had a routine that was out of this world, John.
Yeah.
Out of this world.
So she was never seen in Michigan that whole time when she was doing that.
Yes, and she was still in Michigan. And when she stepped out there and put that routine on, I mean, that crowd never sat down.
Yeah. Wow.
They stood up and screamed and hollered until she came back again, again, and again.
Wow, no kidding.
And you know the rest of history from there.
Yeah. So when you saw her in the gym and she was just a beginner, you could see potential right away.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, but I never thought, I mean, the more I trained her, the more I saw the potential.
Yeah.
Because she was an athlete. You know, she ran track.
Right.
She had some phenomenal legs. She had phenomenal upper body. She was just, just amazing. And she still is to this day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And she was just, because I'm going to tell you something I really was surprised and disappointed about when they let, what you call him, beat her.
Iris Kyle.
Iris Kyle. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't get me started.
I thought Linda had a beautiful physique. Just unbelievable.
Oh, she had an amazing physique. She really did.
You know?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So tell me about that first Olympia you did, Ron, in 86 in Columbus.
Oh, Ohio. In Columbus, Ohio. That's the last one they had in Columbus.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. And I thought I was on point that day. I really thought I was on point. Actually, I had gained a lot more muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really disappointed with my placing because I placed eighth. I thought I should at least made the top six.
Yeah.
I didn't see myself being out of the top six.
Yeah.
And it was just... I thought some of the guys who placed in front of me were overrated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not going to name them right now.
Back then where they had certain guys they thought were going to be at the top?
Yeah, yeah, they really did. But I was still just so elated because I got a chance to compete in the Mr. O. I mean, how many people get that?
I know.
And that was that first one. And from that point on, because I'm going to tell you what really put me on the schedule.
Okay.
When I took second at the Night of the Champions, from that day forth, I was always invited to every show.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
To every show. Hmm. I was always invited to do guest posing. From that day forth, I was guest posing almost every week.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm a pretty good poser. I put a little life into the routines and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I competed in the 87 Southern States in Miami, and you were the guest poser there.
Oh, that's right. That's when, who's that other kid competed from, because he turned pro too. What's his name? The black kid that from out of the country. And he finally turned pro.
Darren Charles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Darren Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was a good poser too.
Oh, he's a great poser, yeah.
He's a great poser, yeah. I remember him. Yeah. And then I remember the next year, I came down to pose again, and that's when Sean Ray showed up.
Oh yeah,
because he had just got his pro card.
Right.
Yeah,
but you were in great shape in Miami when that Southern States. I got some pictures of you. I'll have to send them to you.
Please do. I like to see them. It's been a long time.
Yeah. So that Night of the Champions in '87, Stridham won, right? Stridham got first, and Mike Ashley was second. You were third.
Ain't no way in the world Mike Ashley should have beat me. He ain't never should have beat me. I hate to say it, I have nothing against Mike Ashley, but I don't think he had the symmetry I had. I don't think he had the quality I had.
Yeah.
You know, the conditioning I had. And he's a little dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what else I do? You don't like getting beat by little dudes, and neither do I.
Yeah, you were one of the biggest guys in the pro circuit back then because you were tall and, you know, you had a lot of size. And you were
always too. Yes, but I enjoyed it all. I mean, I had a chance to travel all over the world, man. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know, when I looked at your contest history here, I saw you did all those Grand Prix after the Olympia. So you traveled, like you said, you traveled all over France, Germany.
Yes.
Yeah. Spain.
But I'm going to tell you, in 91, when I did the Olympia, it was in Orlando. I think it was in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah. The last Lee Haney's last one. Yeah.
Yeah. Lee Haney's last one. Well, I placed. What did I place?
Let me see. I got it right here. Yeah, at 11th.
Yeah, and I got beat by 1 point by Richard Gasperi.
Mm.
And I was so disappointed because I was in great shape for that show. Also, too, the reason why I was disappointed, because there's no comparison as far as our symmetry.
Yeah.
Michigan Spirit was not, I mean, it was blocking. And when I checked the score, they had them beating me in the symmetry round.
Yeah.
You know, and I was really pissed off.
Yeah.
And I went on the European tour. I should have placed higher in that show. I'm going to tell you why. Because I placed second.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Yes. And I beat so many of the other guys who were in Olympia. How does that happen?
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah. I just did an interview recently with LQ Gurley.
And LQ, that's my dog.
He said you were really welcoming to him when he got into the pros. You say, welcome to the pros, and, you know, you were really nice to him.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I treat everybody that way. You know, it's an amazing thing when you get the opportunity to travel the world and meet people of all different cultures, of all different languages, of all differentness.
Yeah.
I do the same thing here in this gym. I greet everybody here that comes in Powerhouse.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the minute they walk through that door, I shake their hands, I hug them, I say, okay, we family.
Yeah, yeah.
so don't act like you're crazy.
Hey, Bob, when you were competing in all those shows, were you still a police officer, or did you retire?
I was still a police officer.
Wow,
I didn't stop as a police officer until 93. And that's when I did my last Olympia. That was my last year.
Okay.
I didn't mean for it to be, but just some other things transpired. And that's the reason why this time I want to come back and show people that I can still get in superb condition.
Okay.
Because at I'm in pretty good condition right now at 70 years old.
Yeah.
Right now I'm stepping on the stage. I weigh myself today. I'm at 279.
Wow. That's great. That's great.
It is. All I want to do is make sure.
With training, like nothing hurts really or anything? You're still able to train pretty heavy?
Yes, train pretty heavy, you know, because, you know, I'm one of those control guys, you know.
Yeah.
I remember when I went down and trained with Big Ronnie.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, all those fellas that when I was training with them, they said, yeah, you know, they said, you strong, but you don't move the kind of weight like we move. I said, because I don't train sloppy, you know. No, I train with control, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of throwing weight because that's how you get hurt.
Yeah, that's why you're still able to do it at 79.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I do everything with control. Because the first thing you got to realize, you still got to display this sport as being healthy.
Yeah.
You know, not taking it to a point where you're getting hurt all the time or you're not living the type of life that you need to live outside of this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and to this day, I'm living an amazing life, man. I mean, every day, you know, guys walk in this gym and nobody guess how old I am. Nobody does.
No, nobody would.
And I'm not going to allow them to. In 30 years, I'd be 100 years old. And if I can look like I'm looking now in the next 30 years,
yeah,
it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah. I tell you, bodybuilding's the fountain of youth, isn't it? I mean,
it really is. It really, really is.
Yeah.
I mean, I did have an issue about a few years ago. And what had happened was that I was teaching a boot camp. And I went out one day and I was doing jumping jacks. And when I came down, because I was actually training heavy that day, I was doing 500-pound squats, 2,000-pound leg presses. And I came out one day and I was doing jumping jacks on the 15 jumping jacks. Both my quads snapped.
No way. Really?
Yes.
Huh? Oh,
they both
God.
Snapped. And then when I finally got to the hospital and they did what they're supposed to do, I was bedridden for a year and a half.
Holy shit. They reattached your quads?
They reattached.
Wow.
Yep. So now I'm trying to see how that's going to fare out as far as trying to get them ready for the show.
Yeah.
But they've improved, but I still want to make sure that
they look good, yeah.
They look good.
Same thing happened to LQ. He tore both of his.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he slipped on ice outside the Staples Center. He was going to see a basketball game, and that's why he retired. He tore both of
mine. Oh, my God, because I tore both of mine at the same time. I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
That's no joke.
Wow.
Because I couldn't even get up and walk off the field. They had to pick me up because that time I weighed about 320.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did this happen, Ron?
This happened about maybe 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago.
Okay. How are your leg workouts now?
Good and heavy. Well, you know, you got so many different kind of machines, but, you know, I can still squat.
Yeah.
I can still leg press. I can do it all. But I haven't tried to get ready for a competition, so I'm going to see what happens from this point.
Look, yeah, right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when LQ did his, it was probably in the 90s, so I'm sure it's way different now. I'm sure the medical procedures are much, much better now, you know.
I hope so, because when I finished healing up, the first day I went to rehab, I got a blood clot.
Oh, really?
Yes. I had never hurt like that before. This is the first day I went to rehab.
Oh, really?
And if they hadn't sent me to the hospital quickly, because I had never been a pain, I probably wouldn't have made it.
Right.
That's how bad that blood clot was.
Yeah, yeah. That's what Flex Wheeler had. That's why he lost his leg.
Yeah, that's how he lost his leg.
Yeah.
And mine just, but I just give it to God, my brother, because God is taking care of me like unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I want to ask you a story, Ron. '89 Grand Prix after the Olympia, Mike Quinn told me a story about you and Phil Hill. You guys got tell me what happened there.
Let me tell you what happened. After the show, you know, I didn't place in the top five. So, you know, I came backstage. You know, they had all this, all the warm-up equipment, everything on the floor. And places like jam. And so, and Rob, I joke with everybody. That's just me. Anybody that you meet is going to tell you, well, Ron, you know, he jokes and plays and goofs off and boom, boom, boom. He's a nice guy. And Phil Hill, he didn't like this place. So he rushes backstage and he comes in and he's looking around. He says, what time the bus going to get? What time we going to leave? I mean, he's got this attitude to the hilt. You know, I look at him. I said, well, I looked around. I said, I don't see no windows. I don't see no walls. I don't see no doors. I don't know how you're going to get out of here. But what that got to do with me? So I'm walking away. Next thing I know, this dude jumps me from behind and starts swinging.
Wow.
Yes. I'm saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. That ain't that serious.
Yeah.
So I turn around, and he's swinging at me. So I start swinging back. Boom, boom, boom. Mike Quinn jumps in to help me.
Right.
You know,
because
this Phil here, I mean, he cool, but, and he's swinging me like this, like a sissy. Because I actually thought he was gay anyway, you know. I hate to say it, but I'm just being real. And we just going at it. We going at it. And the thing that really ticked me off, because I was scheduled to do a photo shoot because I was trying to do this training video,
you know,
trying to make a training over so I can make some money.
Yeah.
And we kept going at it, and boom, 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 boom. But we were throwing down. And Mike is in that whip.
Mike, what did Mike do? He tried to break it up?
Yeah, he jumped in, but he was getting hit too because I was swinging, hit him a couple of times mistakenly.
That's what he told me. He goes, he got hit with your punch. He said you hit like a mule.
Yeah, I know, but I wasn't trying to hit him though.
He just
got in the way. But
so we went off. What happened?
Well, you know, because they had it on camera too there. And from there, I just, when I got home, everybody's calling me about it. Boom, boom, boom. I said, tell you what, the next show we do, just make sure they got a ring there. Because after the show is over, we're going to thump. He never showed up for another show.
Oh, really? Wow.
Never. I mean, he never did. So I said, game accomplished. Because I'm going to tell you, if I just saw him, Rob, I can't use foul language. I was going to beat his butt. But he had awesome physique. I don't care what nobody said. That boy had awesome physique.
I think I've got the videotape from that contest, and you could see him on stage with the prejudging. He looked like he was kind of agitated. You know, like, I don't know if he
He had an attitude. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a lot of times I was agitated where I thought I should have been in the money.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
When we talked about the 91, remember, when I went on the 91 tour, I was beating everybody. The only person who beat me was Vince Taylor.
Oh, Vince Taylor, yeah.
And it was a few shows I thought I should have beat Vince in that shows.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that because I took second behind him like in four or five shows.
Yeah, you got second in Finland, Italy, Spain, and Switzerland.
Yes.
Four shows.
And I thought at least in a couple of those shows I should have beat Vince. But I know they won't let me beat him because he plays in the top six at the Olympian.
Yeah.
I placed 14th.
Yeah, he got third at the Olympian.
You know?
Remember?
He was behind
Lee Haney and Dorian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's the name of the game. That's how they play the politics. But
why did you decide to stop competing, Ron, in 93, after 93?
Well, I was trying to do some things to help my family out, you know, because I did pretty good financial-wise.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to take a little break, you know, because I was so disappointed at what happened in that 93 Olympia and the tour. Because I thought that I was in pretty good condition on the tour, and I thought I should have placed a little bit better than what I did, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I went on the European tour, I didn't place in the money at all, not one time.
Yeah.
Not one time. They was always, it's like they always overlooked I'm not saying I was the best bodybuilder, but I thought I stood on stage with some of those guys. I thought that could have been, you know, right there in the money.
Yeah. And you also won that San Jose Pro in 91. That was before the Olympia, right?
Before the Olympia, yeah, I won that.
And then
that
you was Niagara Falls Pro in 89. So you did
I did real good.
Yeah.
Yep. So I knew I could win shows.
You did a lot of contests, Ron. I'm looking at your career.
I know. I did them all.
You did all those Grand Prix every year.
Every year.
Yeah.
But I felt like if I was going to be a bodybuilder, I'm here to compete.
Right.
Also,
right.
too, what it allowed me to do was always stay in shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, I was still teaching at the police academy. So I was running with classes every day. Mm. You know, I was teaching martial arts.
Yeah.
I was doing all the calisthenics. I used to work out with every class. I would come to the gym, do my first workout at 5 in the morning. I would leave here and go to the police academy at 8 in the morning, and I would train 6 classes a day. I would run 2 miles with each class. That's 12 miles a day I was running.
12 miles a day, yeah.
But I was eating anywhere between 5,000 to 6,000 to 7,000 calories every day, and it worked. It kept me in condition.
So that's what you were doing. You were working for the police academy. You were off the street at that point, huh, with the police?
Yeah, I was off the street at that point, yeah.
Okay.
Wow. I was trying to teach knuckleheads how to be police the right way.
Right.
And treat people the way they don't realize that your job is to protect and serve every individual out there. That's your job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to judge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, these knuckleheads today don't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hope they get their head together. Yeah.
Before I let you go, Ron, I want to like throw out a few names at you and you could give me your thoughts on these guys that you competed with. First one is Lee Haney. What did you think of Lee Haney?
Awesome. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing young man. I mean, he's at one Olympias. I'm trying to think this Olympia. Which one was it? It was one in 87.
Yeah.
And that's when I came in. I thought I came in great shape.
You were in great shape in that. I remember.
Lee Haney and his wife said to me, and it calmed me. Lee Haney said, Ron, he said, today you're going to be second or third. And this is going to be the best you've ever placed.
Wow.
That's what Lee Haney and his wife both told me.
Yeah.
I was so gratified.
Yeah.
But you know, I placed ninth in that show.
Yeah, that was you know, I remember that show because I don't know if you remember this. They used to have, this was before it was on cable TV or anything. They had a closed circuit. We went to a theater, I think, and watched it.
Yes, that's
what they're doing. From the gym, went to this theater, and they broadcast it live from Sweden. And everybody there was, like, impressed with you, Ron. Everybody was like, wow, man, Ron Love looks great. And we couldn't believe when you placed that low.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when I placed that low.
Yeah, because you were really outstanding.
I appreciate that. I really do, because that was one of the shows where I really thought, and I was so devastated because here I got Mr. Olympia telling me that I should be right there in the thick of things, you know.
Right.
And it didn't happen. You know, I said, what is, it really put a bad taste in my mouth as far as with the weeder.
Yeah.
Because the weeders were sending me all over the world to meet people, to represent bodybuilding, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they were just playing games, you know, and I thought it was so unfair, you know.
You were working for the weeder organization back then?
I did a lot of things for the weeders, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they would send you all over the place and wouldn't pay you a dime.
Damn, yeah.
I mean, when they sent us, was it Helsinki, Finland?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Helsinki. It was Budapest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a whole group of us sent.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, we were representing bodybuilding. We were putting on some shows. And after everything was over, we're in this hotel. And a little Canadian guy, I can't remember his name, he couldn't pay for his room.
Okay.
So I paid for his room. I never got paid back from him.
Right.
I can't think of his name right now. But they weren't going to let... Yeah, Steve Briswell.
Okay.
Yeah, I had some running with him, too.
Oh, really?
but the part that really agitated was for me that he wasn't able to pay for his room, and they weren't going to let us come back home there. They weren't going to let us leave the country unless we paid for that hotel. So I came up with the money to pay for this hotel room.
Mm.
You know, why didn't the weeders do that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't care what nobody think or no, I don't care what nobody say about me talking about the weeders. I'm just telling like it is.
Right.
You know, sure. I'm being a man and telling like it is.
Sure.
If anybody got anything to say to me, he got my number. Call me. All right. Then we can talk on this too.
Right.
Because I had a lot of love for the weeders, but they just wasn't supportive enough for the guys who were representing them in every kind of way.
Yeah.
So,
what'd you think of Vince Taylor?
Vince Taylor rocks the house, baby. I love Vince.
Yeah.
You know, there's times when I thought I should have been right there with him.
Yeah.
I thought I could compete. I was kind of disappointed that I didn't place better in some of the shows, you know, especially when it came to Olympia, especially when it came in the European tour shows, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you bust your butt to be there just like everybody else. Just give me my proper results, my proper respect, you know. Vince was great.
Yeah.
I mean, not only did the audience love him, I loved him. That guy to this day.
Right.
I think he's one of the best guys, man.
Yeah.
Great personality. I mean, just a great guy, man. Just a great guy.
What about Lee Labrada? We talked a little bit about him. What do you think of Lee?
Awesome. Me and Labrada were friends before I even stepped on stage. Lee Labrada brought me down to his hometown.
No kidding.
I mean, gave me so much love in every kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, awesome physique, but we were competitors. I just thought that I was a big guy. He was a little guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't care what nobody said. Don't no big guy like getting beat by a little guy. But awesome performer.
Yeah.
I mean, an awesome young man. He really is. I mean, I love him to death.
Yeah.
And his son, hey, that boy doing good. He's come along real well.
What about Mike Quinn?
Mike Quinn, that's my dog now. That's my dog. We warriors together. I love Mike Quinn. I mean, he's a beast.
Yeah.
He's a beast. You know, if you're going to train with somebody, that's the kind of guy you want to train with.
Right. Because
you know you're going to get it done.
Right.
Yes, a lot of respect for him. I hope he's doing well.
Yeah. I think he's going through some tough times now. But
I heard he was. Yeah. But if you talk to him, tell him I miss him, I love him.
Okay.
You know, that's my boy. If he needs anything he needs from me, he got it.
Okay. What about Robbie Robinson?
Robbie Robinson. Let me tell you about Robbie. There was one year, this before I turned pro, I went to Columbus, Ohio for the Olympia.
Okay.
And, you know, when I first saw Robbie, I just thought he was just so, I thought he had already should have won the Olympia. I thought he was just so amazing, you know. Like, he was one of the best I ever seen. I mean, he was my hero.
Yeah.
You know, I done brought my jacket, I done brought my pants, I done brought my underwear, I done brought everything for him to sign.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's how much... This guy was just so amazing to me.
Yeah.
So when he got there, he comes into the auditorium, and I'm saying, Robbie. I said, hey, Robbie, I need for you to sign this for me. I need for you to sign it. And he looks at me and says, I ain't got time. I said, what do you mean you ain't got time? I said, I'm the police, bro. You better sign my stuff. Boom, 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 boom. You better sign this. I didn't come all this way to see you, and you ain't going to do this? I mean, I was so disappointed with him. And he didn't sign anything.
No kidding. Oh,
he didn't sign it. He just kept walking. But let me tell you what happened. When I did the Night of Champions, you saw the video with the one he's in. That's second Night of Champions.
Right.
So we at the meeting, and I walk into the meeting. Everybody says, oh, my God, Big Round Love. Big Round coming to boom, boom. And then I hear this, yeah, Big Round Love, how you doing? It's Robbie. And so I said, Robbie? Oh, yeah, Robbie Robinson. Yeah, I know who you are, man. Yeah, yeah. I said, Robbie, step over here for a second. I got something to tell you, bro. I told him the story. So Robbie said, I did that to you? I said, yeah. Don't worry about today because I'm going to beat you today. That's exactly what I told him.
And you did.
I did beat him that day.
You did, yeah, right.
Yeah, but Robbie's a great guy, man. He's more of a loner, you know. He's just to himself.
Yeah,
he's a little different, but he's a good guy. I like Robbie.
Yeah.
I didn't like him that day, though. I drove all the way down there to see his dude.
What about Gary Strider?
I like Gary. I didn't get a chance because that day at the show, I thought I could have beat him that day, too, because I didn't think his back compared to mine, you know.
Right, yeah, his back was a little weak.
It's weak. It wasn't just a little weak. It was real weak. You know.
That was really nice.
Yeah, I know you were. I know you ain't blind. Other than that, he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
And he's a good guy. He was okay.
How about Mike Christian?
That's my main guy, bro. I have much love for Mike Christian. I just hated the things that happened to him because I thought he was right in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
But he was too busy on that line of trying things and doing things that he shouldn't have been doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he had a great physique, you know? But, you know, guys got to realize you got to stay within the lines.
Yeah.
You can't do things that's going to harm you, you know? And I just watched him because, you know, when he switched over to that organization that Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went to that second show, man, and that was – and I had never seen him like that before. And that shouldn't happen. The sport of bodybuilding is still a very healthy sport.
Yeah.
Let everybody represent it the way that it's supposed to be represented, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have to realize how we influence other people out here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, yes, because I'm just looking at what has happened since I did Dave's show. I've gotten contacted from people all over the world, you know, and everybody that I talked to has said, "Mom, thank you for, you know, being a great influence. You know, thank you for being such a nice guy. You know, thank you for representing bodybuilding in a healthy way, you know."
Yeah, yeah.
Because look at how many of us, look how many bodybuilders have passed away.
Oh, recently, yeah.
Recently.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, you know.
I know.
Yes. So we got to do what we got to do to represent something that we love so much.
Absolutely.
So that people also look at us in the way that we're supposed to be looked at.
Yeah.
And respected.
Yeah.
But we got to respect them also.
Yeah.
I got to get out of here because the gym getting ready to close.
Oh, okay, Ron. All right, buddy. Well, thank you very much for spending the time with us, Ron. And it was a great pleasure talking to you.
It was a great pleasure talking to you. It's good to see you again, man.
Good to see you too, brother.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing.
I wish you the best this year, and thanks again for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
Thank you. Thank you too. All right.
All right, brother. Take care. I hope to see you too.
All right. Much love, my brother.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring yet another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you also to all of our generous Patreon donors who continue to support the show with your donations every month. If anyone out there is interested in being a Patreon donor, you can just go to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to be a Patreon donor. All right, before we let you go, I'm going to read this article, which is from the November 1986 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine, and it is called Labrada Wins Night of Champs. Officer Love is runner-up. It's written by Bill Reynolds, who used to be the editor-in-chief of Muscle and Fitness. He has since passed on, but Bill was a great editor-in-chief and a great writer and a great supporter and follower of bodybuilding. All right, it reads, Super Symmetrical Lee Labrada won all three rounds of judging plus the pose down, defeating 17 other bodybuilding stars to win the Night of the Champions professional competition June 14th in New York City. Lee promptly banked his $10,000 check in preparation for his marriage 2 weeks later in Houston. Winning on his first professional effort makes Labrada one of the automatic favorites for the Mr. Olympia show this fall in New York. It was actually Columbus. But he doesn't plan to be there this fall to compete against the big guys like Lee Haney, Albert Beckles, Rich Gaspari, and Mike Christian, all of whom passed on the Night of the Champions to ensure uninterrupted preparation for the Mr. O. And the Mr. Olympia show has become a competition of big men, with only now retired Muhammad Mokawe placing in the top 10 last year at a body weight under 200 pounds. Our 180-pound Night of the Champions winner is passing on this year's Mr. O to better prepare for next fall's showdown. So who will win this year? Stay tuned. You'll learn the answer in Muscle and Fitness if you aren't one of the lucky ones actually attending the show of shows or watching on closed circuit TV. The Night of the Champions was the 8th, and as usual, it was promoted by the familiar Physique Productions team of Wayne D'Amelia, Karen Clark, and Charles Blake. It was also held in familiar surroundings at the Beacon Theater on Broadway in the Big Apple. The Beacon has often been the site of high-level bodybuilding shows, and I think I've seen something like 15 of them there, including 5 Knights of the Champions. The judging panel included Jim Mannion, John Calcione, May Molika, John Kemper, Mike Katz, Clark Sanchez, Art Bedway, Dominic Certo, Nick Stanskiewicz, and Jim Raquel. As we shall see, the decisions of these individuals were not wholeheartedly accepted by a capacity audience. Labrada got off the right foot with 3 firsts, 4 seconds, and 2 thirds in round one, with the 2 high and 2 low scores deleted to give him a round total of 9. Ron Love, who most recently had won the heavyweight national championship and then had been displaced by Germany's Peter Hensel at the World Championships, was a couple of bumps behind Lee with a total round score of 11. The rest of the top 6 after round 1 were Tony Pearson with 14 points, David Hawk with 18, Frank Richard with 25, and Barry DeMay with 30. Labrada consolidated his lead by scoring all first-place votes in round 2, giving him a perfect round score of 5. He was followed in the top 6 by Love with 11, Hawk with 17, Richard with 20, Pearson with 26, and DeMay with 27. Labrada essentially finished off his competition by notching another 9 first-place votes in the free-posing round for another perfect round score of 5 and a 3-round score of 19. The other round 3 scores and 3-round totals were Love with 10 in round 3 for 32 total points, Pearson with 19 in round 3 for 59 total points, Hawk with 25 in round 3 with 60 total points, Frank Richard with 16 points in round 3 for 61 total points, and Barry DeMay with 30 points in round 3 for 87 total points. The pose down changed several of these places as the following pose down points and totals were achieved by the top 6 men. Labrada, 5 points in the pose down for 24 points. Love with 10, 42 points. Frank Richard with 15 for 76 points. Pearson with 20, 79 points. Hawk with 25, 85 points. And DeMay with 30. DeMay wasn't included in the pose down, which normally comprises the top 6 men, and hence didn't have a true final point total. Labrada was a stunned winner who stared for many long seconds at his first place plaque and check before finally coming to the middle of the stage for his victory poses. But he shouldn't have been surprised because he displayed the same winning characteristics as 3-time Mr. Olympia Frank Zane did in his prime. Terrific symmetry and proportions, sharp muscularity, more than adequate muscle mass, effective posing, and masculine good looks. I distinctly recall being highly impressed with Lee the first time I saw him compete when he pressed the eventual overall winner, Phil Williams, while competing a weight class higher than normal at the 1984 USA Championships in San Jose, California. Lee came back later in the year to place in the top 5 of the middleweight class at the Nationals in New Orleans, distantly trailing class winner John Natashek, who went on a week later to win the World Middleweight Championship. Labrada went home after the Nationals and really dug in, bringing up a minor weak point here and there and adding considerable muscular detail to his complete physique in the year between the National Championships, emerging a clear winner in his class at the Nationals last year in Miami. He did lose to the light heavyweight championship Phil Williams, him again, for the overall title. 2 weeks later at Gothenburg, Sweden, Labrada was the only American to win a world championship as the German team almost cleaned the slate. But to many in the audience, Lee would have been the overall winner had the IFBB chosen one. And now he's proven himself one of the top professionals by winning the Night of the Champions. Ron Love, a massive Detroit cop, turned professional at the Night of the Champions as well. But most bodybuilding aficionados would have rated him at best a dark horse in pre-meet handicapping. But Ron is anything but and also ran. And he was a worthy runner-up to Labrada with one of the most massive and certainly the hardest physiques in the competition. Love doesn't have the aesthetic physique Labrada possesses, but he more than makes up for it in brute muscle mass and needle-sharp definition. Ron also has very good symmetry with wide shoulders capped with huge ripped deltoids, flaring lats, and a very narrow waist. To me, he actually looked more impressive than Labrada standing in the lineup. I'll be interested to see how well he does in this year's Mr. Olympia, it being a big man event. Persistent, always in the top shape, Frank Richard took a deserved 3rd place, 1 spot up from his placing the year before. Many fans in the audience felt he should have placed 2nd, if not actually won the whole shebang. But Frank himself was quite happy with his placing. I hung out with Frank before the show, and he said he doubted that all the other top guys could maintain optimum condition for every contest. I agree with Frank because he's done it every time out for the past 2 years, despite what must be considerable pain and physical limitation imposed by his massive injuries nearly a decade ago. Come on, guys, get on the stick. Richard is a very big man, standing about 6 feet and weighing a good 225 pounds of ripped beef. And he's always had exceptional symmetry and proportions, even back in the early 70s when he was winning his class at the NABBA Mr. Universe show. Having had a host of athletic injuries to tend with over the years, I get a chill to see Frank up there fighting it out with the best of the younger guys. And I don't think he'll quit soon because he has the enthusiasm of a teenage bodybuilder right now. Tony Pearson has had a lock on the World Mixed Pairs Championship, but this is the first time he placed in the top five at an IFBB professional competition. Tony, however, has obviously been doing his homework because his fourth place finish didn't raise an eyebrow anywhere in the Beacon. And personally, I think his high placing has been a little too long in coming. Pearson has a genetically predetermined weakness that he struggled manfully to overcome, but it's now up to a respectable level, giving his physique good proportions and totally awesome symmetry. And Tony's always had a terrific posing routine, clear back to the 70s when he was a raw teenager fresh out on the West Coast from St. Louis, grabbing off the Mr. Los Angeles title. He's come a long way since, and it couldn't have happened to a harder working bodybuilder. Fifth place went to a massive Dave Hawk, and this was where the audience began to take exception, feeling that Barry DeMay certainly deserved a place higher than Dave, if not actually to win the show. Dave has put on a tremendous amount of muscle mass and placing in the top five now at three straight pro shows as a result, but he sacrificed plenty of muscular detail in the process. True, he looks great from the front in a lineup, but he loses a bit when turning to the side for any type of pose, and he almost totally disappears when doing a back pose. There isn't a cut anywhere on his back right now. Hawk still shows tremendous promise, however, and I fully expect him to place well in the Mr. Olympia if he's willing to train down enough to regain the exciting muscularity he displayed last year. And this guy is still quite young, so I'm sure his longtime rivalry, which dates back to teenage competitions with Rich Gaspari, will be continued at this year's Mr. O. When Barry DeMay wasn't called out for the final five, the audience erupted in boos, which continued for many minutes, stopping only when a graceful DeMay came out on stage for an impromptu guest posing exhibition. This, of course, engendered an encore or two, each of which was greeted by thunderous applause. Barry is a terrific bodybuilder, but he wasn't in the shape he'd attained for last year's Mr. Olympia. He was big and proportionate, and he has exquisite symmetry, but the hardness just wasn't there. He told me later he probably had too little sodium in his system because he simply couldn't get pumped up backstage for the prejudging. So he ate a little salt, and he was much better at the evening show, but by then it was too late, much to the chagrin of every DeMay fan in the audience. His prejudging form placed him sixth overall. Robbie Robinson continued his spirited comeback by placing seventh in the show that he won twice in the late 70s, 1978 and 79. Robbie still has tremendous symmetry and proportions with enough muscle mass to satisfy even the most bulk-crazed fan, but the almost ridiculously sharp muscularity he used to have still isn't back. This is a man who had the most widely envied physique in the world when I first went to work for Joe Weider nearly 9 years ago, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him back on top of the heap soon. The man has all the goods. Eighth place went to a guy who would have won the show easily if he'd been in any kind of shape, Eduardo Kowak. Eduardo has enormous muscle mass, perfect proportions, and enviable symmetry, but he lacks any semblance of IFBB-style muscularity. He might have been able to win the NABBA and WABA shows looking like this, but he can forget the IFBB titles until he learns that eating salted peanuts and spaghetti snowed in sugar the week before an important competition isn't de rigueur. For now, it's a shame to see that much potential going to waste. Bill Grant was in the top three last year, but he slipped back to ninth this go-round. He looked pretty good, perhaps not as sharp as last year, but certainly with greater muscle mass and nicer proportions. But Billy seemed to lack some of his usual competitive fire, and I think that was the real key to his downfall. I'd like to see him back with his usual self-confidence, which would bring him right back up there again. Charles Glass backflipped his new 210-pound physique all over the stage to cop 10th place. It's hard to believe that only 3 years ago, Glass won the middleweight world championships weighing only 175 pounds. Charles has always had tremendous deltoids, arms, and chest, but now the rest of his physique is up to the high standard of those magnificent body parts, giving him a winning look. And it's pretty impressive to see a guy as big as he holding a floor planche for 5 seconds partway through his routine. Ali Mala muscled his way into 11th place with his dense and muscular physique. I've noted Ali's unparalleled back development in past contest reports, but should also have mentioned that his arms, chest, and shoulders are also a very high standard. Ali's legs used to hold him back since they were big and smooth, but he's now discovered how to rip up his thighs, as few other bodybuilders have, So he's creeping up the ranks slowly but surely. 12th place went to a flat-looking Bob Birdsong, who has been placing high in literally every professional show for the past 4 years. To me, the bird looked overtrained. But in the bustle after the competition, I didn't get a chance to talk to him. Bob has great determination to reach the top, and I'd be surprised if he didn't someday win a couple of pro titles. And this is the guy who first made it big internationally in 1973. Will Sylvester was one of the most perfect physiques in the sport, but he's sort of a spud web of bodybuilding, literally the smallest guy in the pro side of the sport. And I don't think his Calypso posing routine helps him much. I remember one of the first British bodybuilding magazines I ever saw had Wilf on the cover in commemoration of his 1967 Mr. Britain win. I think Al Buckles was on the cover of the other one I saw back then. In this contest, Wilf placed 13th. Gary Leonard, still over bulked, was 14th. I remember the incredibly tight shape Gary was in at the 1979 Mr. America show when he placed second to Ray Menser, but Gary was a notch down in terms of muscularity when he won the title a year later, and he seems to have regressed virtually every year since. And that's a real shame because he has exceptional proportions and muscle shape. Rework the old thinking, Gary, and you'll be up there. Think muscularity. Appy Steinbeck posed stylishly to Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake, and he ended up in 15th place. Appy is a tremendously hard trainer and was rewarded for all his efforts with a world championship in 1983. But I don't think he has the basic structure required to win a pro title or even place in the top three. Prove me wrong, Appy. 16th place went to John Brown, not in his usual hard shape, but you wouldn't know it from his posing routine. John was out there as usual 8 to 9 minutes, combining breakdancing and mime with an actual bodybuilding posing. But in watching Big Bad John go through his routine, I noticed that he really didn't hit a pose the entire time. If he had, it might have launched him into the top 10. Dale Ruplinger, in placing 17th, personified a bulking experiment gone crazy. It was difficult for me to connect the colossally developed, albeit phenomenally smooth, physique he displayed at the Night of the Champions with the athletic, highly muscular body he took to the U.S., National, and World Championships in 1982. He'd have done a hell of a lot better with the 82 model. And bringing up the rear was Jean-Paul Jenkins, who won the U.S. Championships and World Games last year. Despite his massive potential, he has come across as a rank amateur competing professionally. He wasn't quite as smooth as he had been at last year's Mr. Olympia, but it was close. And Jenkins won't place much higher unless he does some pushaways from the table between now and his next pro show. All right, so that is the 1986 Night of the Champions. It's interesting. I think he was wrong on Bill Grant. Bill was not in the top three in 85. In fact, he wasn't even in the top five because that was when Albert Beckles won and Rich Gaspari placed second. And I think Bob Birdsong was third. Maybe that's who he meant. And Mike Christian was fourth. And I believe maybe Bob Paris was fifth. It's also interesting to hear about Dale Ruplinger because we had Dale on the show and he said that he really got ripped off at that show, but Bill Reynolds was saying he's very, very smooth. There's a picture of Dale doing like side chest shot that goes through Facebook every once in a while and everybody says it's photoshopped. So that's how big Dale was back in 1986. So a lot of great stars in this contest. It's also interesting to hear what he said about Eduardo Kowak because we just had Jerry Branham on the show and he talked about Eduardo eating spaghetti or hamburgers the night before the contest, but Jerry said he was still ripped on the day of the show, but Bill Reynolds said he could have definitely been more ripped. And I remember this contest because of the Barry DeMay controversy. I remember the crowd was booing a lot when Barry didn't even make the top five because a lot of people thought he should have won, but Barry was a very popular bodybuilder and a great physique, and he looked in good condition in these pictures here, but like you said, if he didn't have enough salt in his system, he couldn't get a pump. He was probably flat during the prejudging. And probably looked a lot better at the night show, and that's what the audience saw, and that's why they were going crazy. But Barry, I think, took fifth the year before at the 85 Olympia. So, yeah, it could have been him and Labrada going for first place. All right. So that was an interesting article from Bill Reynolds. And that is it for our show, guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Train hard out there. Keep safe. And we will see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Take care.